For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, for the record, for the record, for the record, for the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's
right. Welcome to the Mount Woodgie Studios here in Currumbin on the Gold Coast. Today, I have a very special guest. We're going to flip the coin a little bit. During our last couple of seasons, we have always had great stories of redemption. Today, we're going to go and see what it was like on the other side of it of a young man who grew up in an environment where his dad wasn't there, and now he's chasing his dreams to be one of the world's best, if not the best. Mateo Tapia. Blew it. Right, well, welcome to the studios, and thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Nah, good. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it means a lot to be able to, you know, come on and talk with you guys. So, yeah.
You're in fight camp at the moment, are you, mate?
Yes and no. I had a fight cam, so I'm just staying ready as best as I can.
So your fight prep just basically staying, is...
Yeah.
Good on you, mate. Look, for a lot of people out there, I guess in the boxing scene, they all know who you are. You are labelled as to be something absolutely amazing, very bright, you're undefeated. You have a work ethic that is over and above. And, mate, I've got to say I'm very impressed with the young man you are. And can you just say how old you are?
22.
Sure. So while most people at 22 are out running amok, chasing pussy and snorting rack, you're locking down and chasing a dream.
Yeah, this is my Friday nights.
This is your Friday nights. Welcome to mine at the Clink, brother, and it's a pleasure to join it with you. Mateo, can you take us back? Let's go back, and for those that don't know you, let's tell your story. You had a dad back then when you were younger that got locked up, correct? For four years, was it?
Yeah, 4 years, correct. So I was born in Mexico, came here when we were three. My dad had no qualifications at the time, I'm pretty sure, but he knew how to paint houses and do like little handyman jobs. So that's what he was doing. And mum was cleaning houses, but it was getting a bit too hard. Moving to, like, once we're in Australia, it was getting too hard. And I think, he had mates around that time, and he just got caught trafficking drugs into the country, which is, you know, I don't blame him. I don't care what he used to do, but he tried to put a roof over our head.
Yeah, I get it.
He's an angel now. He's a good dad. But I guess he was just trying to put a roof over our head, and that's what he was doing, you know, not all his life, but, you know, he wasn't an angel growing up either, so.
What was he caught importing?
Cocaine.
And he was sentenced?
I think it was 3 with the 1, yeah.
How did you find
that? I was fairly young at that age, so I didn't really, I knew he was in prison, but I never knew what for or, like, what. And I only knew when I was like 9 years old, 10 years old, where I started knowing a bit more. But he was out of prison then. But at the time, I was just a kid, but we were always going in to visit him almost every weekend.
What was that like for you, though, going into, you know?
I just, to be honest, all I remember is sitting around a table and Dad would, open the cans of Coke, those little, rip them off and like, and he'll make me like do stuff like that on the table. That's how young I was.
Yeah, flicking it.
Like flicking through the goalpost.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting around the table or doing that and like eating and catching up with him. And then, yeah, fuck, it's hard to remember. I was pretty young. Yeah, when he got out, there was still trouble at home with mum because mum sort of waited for him.
Yeah.
For the three, four years.
Yep.
There was a lot of trouble at home when he came back. And then obviously a divorce came after the fucking when he came out. And then, he left. He moved to Bali very early. and he was working in the mines. I think he got his trades thing in prison.
Right.
He went to TAFE in prison or something like that.
Okay.
So he got his qualifications there.
So you were living with mum?
Yeah, I stayed with mum all that time. She was cleaning houses still at the time. And I was going to clean houses with her because she couldn't leave me alone around that, age.
Support, no one there to help.
Yeah, I just remember, and she broke her leg at one point. I remember she broke her leg and she still went and she had to clean houses. And they're for wealthy people. And I just remember her rolling around on a chair, just sweeping, doing all this stuff. So I'd always try help when I was young.
Was mum Mexican as well?
She's Peruvian. Mum was born here by accident, I think. So that's okay. Why we chose to move here. So it's a bit of a crazy story.
What's the story? It sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Mum was born here, so that's okay. How we decided to move here.
Yeah, right.
Which is like,
How did you find that as a young man? You know, you'd already sort of not had your dad there for those many years in your early part, and then, you know, dad's out and dad's gone again.
Yeah, it sucked. Especially, I think I needed him there growing up through those years, and I just never had him there, which was hard. I just needed someone to talk to, like a dad, you know, but I didn't have that father figure growing up.
Have you had that moment with your dad since growing up to talk about any of this?
Not until like a year and a half ago we started getting close. He's decided to move back and he's like, oh, do you want to come live with me? So I was like, we always got along. But yeah, we're just living together now and I've only just had it a year and a half or two now.
Where so it's still only very fresh. Around. Yeah, now. So you're 22 years of age.
And every
a massive part of your life, you haven't had dad there, have you?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And how's that been for you?
Oh, it sucked, man. I went through a rough patch without him going through my teenage years. I didn't have him there. You know, he was always telling me on the phone, like when I'd call him, oh, do this, do that, pull your head in. But like I'd never have him there. So I wouldn't really listen or take his advice. So I'd always get up to mischief. When I was 14, I think it just started. First, it was drugs, wagon school, drugs, obviously. I was 14, I think, when I started. I think it was after I lost a national title.
Oh, so you'd already been Adelaide. You'd already been boxing by this stage in your amateurs?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. So how old was that when you started boxing?
9, I started. So around the time they split up.
Okay, and was this something that mum sort of suggested would help you or was it how did that eventuate?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I was overweight at the time and I was getting bullied in primary school. So mum was like, you better fucking do something about it because she used to make me walk up this hill from school every day and I used to fucking hate it.
Yeah.
That wasn't working. So we drove past the boxing gym and at first, I thought it was a wrestling gym because I liked wrestling at the time.
You did? Oh, like WWF sort of shit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's at night.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, Mom, I want to fucking go in and give it a try. And then ended up being a boxing gym and she just talked me into just going there and trying it out. And that's where it all started.
So do you think that was something that, you know, really helped you through those tough times?
I was just going there because I knew if I trained, I'd be sweet after it, like mentally. Even when I was young, I just knew I'd go in and train and I'd feel so much better.
How powerful is that, you saying that, but you can acknowledge that and at a young age know that for you to feel good, and I'm a big advocate for mental health.
That's the same with me. If I'm not in the gym, I'm either surfing or running.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I need to do one of those things or else I have the worst fucking day ever.
It is. And it's such a big thing that I think, that, you know, if anyone that's listening to this that's struggling with their mental health or, you know, looking for a better life choice, start exercising. You can't beat it. They say for 1 hour of intensive cardio exercise, you will get a 12-hour positive chemical release of the brain. So therefore, the endorphins and you know, what's it called? The fucking serotonin levels and all that sort of. Oh, you feel good shit.
Yeah. I just knew I had to show up every day. Even if I was not having the best day, I'd still show up. And I think that's what sort of separated me from a lot of kids growing up, is that I always went on Monday. I always went, even when I was sore, I'd always go. And that's how it was.
And obviously too, mum's a hard worker and, you know, like she's setting the example. Basically, she would have been a big role model for you, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she was. We lost a lot of touch in our teenage years. I don't speak to as much. Yeah, what can you do? We still keep in touch a little bit, but we're all right.
I can see it in your face how much you love your mum.
She's a crazy woman, but you know, I wouldn't be where I was today without her. Because there's things that I see in her that I have myself, and I have to thank her for.
She's obviously a fighter. You know, and
yeah, she's fucking like, fiery. Wow.
But you know what? These are the things that set us up for life, and there's also too those things that can fuck us up for life. And you know, you were saying about rebelling in your teenage years. Let's elaborate a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I left school at 15, 16, and I left to work Bricky's Labouring, and I was at the time living with mum and my best mate. So my best mate moved into our place and mum was never home on the weekend. She'd leave Friday and come back Sunday. I don't know why, but that's how it was.
Yeah.
And she used to leave us alone. So me and my mate used to work the same job and we used to get $1,100 cash each a week.
How old 16. We are? Fucking 16. You're fucking killing it.
So
the two of you have got a couple of grand every week in your pocket. What do you do?
But we had no one to tell us what to do. I had no one, so we would obviously go out.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
Blow the money. We would eat out, blow the money, just stupid stuff. You know, we were doing a lot of drugs at the time. It's like every night we're almost doing something.
Yep.
I think it was weed. Where every night through the like weekdays, we're doing something. Then on the weekends, it'll be even heavier. And that's how it was when we were young, just from like 16, 15, 16, 17 was just like that.
Did you?
And just parties every weekend.
Did you ever start to consider that, you know, at some stage it could go real bad for you and end up sort of in some serious shit where you could end up in jail like Dad? And, you know, was it something back then that you sort of thought, oh, well, fuck it, Dad's been there, I'm sweet,
even,
I don't care, or was it sort of...
That did go through my mind when I was like 16, 17, when I started actually selling drugs. Just, I was going, what the fuck am I doing?
Yep.
But I always had in the back of my head that I wanted to be a professional boxer. I told myself as soon as I turned 18, that's when my life will start as a fighter. And that's, I don't know how I turned it around, but.
How many fights had you had, Mateo? Like between all this going on, you're starting, you're 9 years of age, you're in the gym, and now we're talking about you're around that 16-year-old rebellious sort of stage. Had you had any major fights in your amateur career? How many had you had? And you know, where were your rankings?
I think I had like, I think by the first 14, I had like 30 fights.
Which is huge. Like I've been involved with Muay Thai for over 20 years. And I love the sport. I love any contact sport, but Muay Thai is my go-to, you know, and I still train at 44 every night and,
I think I had like 40 or 50 to wrap up my amateur career by the time I turned 18. But I was still fighting going through this. I didn't really care. I still showed up. I wasn't fit or anything, but I'd show up to training every day. And
was your record pretty neat? Like, record was pretty neat for your amateurs?
I think it was definitely more wins than losses.
Yep.
But there was a fair few losses, and there was a lot of losses in there that could have gone either way because it was amateurs. So,
amateurs is a bit funny when the old point system comes in, isn't it?
Yeah, I've had a few bad decisions.
I bet you have. Did you find that your upbringing really created a lot of fire in your belly?
Yeah, I think so. It would have had to, because I fight for like, just want to prove myself that I'm not that kid I was, and I don't want to be that kid that everyone knew as like drugs, or like, you know, selling drugs, just that little rat bag that everyone knew around here. But I'm, you know, I want to prove to myself and prove to everyone that I'm not that kid. You know, I'm a very switched on kid. I do work hard, and you know, I'm going to get to where I want to get to.
I have no doubt in that, and you know, I said earlier when we kicked off, I've been watching, you know, a lot of your footage and your social media platforms. And I must say too, the talk that I'm getting from different people I've spoken to over the last week or so since we first got in contact, mate, you're held in absolute high regard and respected, very respected. And I think that says a lot about the man that you are. You know, I look at this sort of side of, if we want to talk about a statistical side of it, that generally, yeah, and I'm blessed. I've got three sons and a daughter, and my youngest son I'm fucking worried about. But my other boys are extremely switched on, successful, and my wrongs have been their rights. So, you know, what they had to go through, obviously, with me not being there in the years of drugs, jail, gang life, they don't want a bar of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's scared them. And I think that if anything in my life, if I can do, is be proud that, sure, I fucked up. I made those mistakes, you know, but I truly believe that my children won't follow in my path. You know, you're doing basically back then what would be expected, that you would follow in your dad's footsteps. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was scared I was going to turn out like him. And mum was always on my ass going, you're going to fucking turn out like your dad. You're going to turn out like a piece of shit, this and that. Or like going through teenage years, that's all I'd hear.
So was that more that she was just worried she wanted you to have a better life and didn't want you to, you know, repeat again what she's had to go through with your dad?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I was always hearing that growing up, like, you're going to be like your dad, you fucking piece of shit, this and that. They had their problems, but fuck.
Mate, I want to commend you. I'm interested. Yeah. I really want everybody out there to resonate with your story, because the whole point, like I said, also is the fact that I wanted it to flip the coin. You know, we have so many of our guests and extremely high-profile guests that have very powerful stories. And I believe that there's 1,000 other young men out there and young women that could relate to what you're doing. And I think that having someone that is doing it and has lived it is so important. Lived experience to me is everything.
Around that time, I had a car accident. I was in the back of a car and ended up rolling 3 times, and like everyone in the car, mate broke his collarbone. And just like, if we went right at this road, we would have went off a cliff and we wouldn't be here today. But I think that was a big part that just opened my eyes. I think I was just turning 17 when that happened. And I just told myself, I'm pretty sure I had a schoolies trip coming up that had, like, straight after the car accident, like 2 weeks later, I think we left to Bali. And I told myself that after this trip, this schoolies trip, that was it for me. That was my last little hoorah. But that car accident changed my fucking life. It just opened my eyes, like how quickly life can change, and you don't want to be in those situations.
Was it a situation where was everyone off their head and fucking, you know, just loose and shit, or was it
the
just
driver wasn't?
Yep.
But we were off. I was probably the most sober there, but we were all my mates, we went to a boat party through the day.
Yep.
And we came back home, obviously sorted out some stuff, and then went to another party, but
this
on our way to this other party. And fucking, it just happened. We told this dude to stop speeding, and he was like, fucking stop, like slow down. And he went around another corner, lost control. Lucky it spun the other way, because, yeah.
Isn't it powerful, these things that happen to us in life that, you know, really sort of smack us in the mouth, so to speak, and you know, you know, I think it's important sometimes because you've got to be aware of it and you've been given an opportunity to make the best of your life. Because like you said, it could have been an absolute single decision at a split decision, which is wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And even the fact of, you know, what if one of you survived and the rest of you's died, that person's got to carry all those burdens, you know, and be fucked up.
Yeah, that sucks. And I always knew I had the talent, but I never was, like, treating it properly, the boxing. And, yeah, that's always played on my head. You know, I always knew I had the talent, had the skill, but I wasn't doing the right shit.
Would you say discipline?
Discipline was up there. I was around the wrong people as well. I was just like, oh, fuck it. You know, fuck, I'll be all right. Like, I wasn't really listening to Dad at the time.
Yeah.
Even though he'd tell me and, like, was, like, I'd still see him in Bali. I'd do trips and stuff to Bali, like, see him for a week and then come back. And then I wouldn't see him for 8 months. And then I'd go back to Bali, see him. And he'd always tell me there. But then, yeah, when I went back to Bali on that schoolies trip, him and my uncle had a real big chat to me. And I told him what I wanted to do was turn professional. And they didn't believe me at the start. I was just laughing. But they ended up having like, we ended up having like a 30, 40 minute chat. And yeah, that opened my eyes. My uncle's not an angel as well. So he was like, the only thing you get is you either end up in jail or you end up dead.
That's exactly right.
There's a very small percent that get out with nothing. So I remember that from the thing. So I just, once I got back home from the schoolies trip, I just changed. I don't know. I was just...
Why, what was it that was hard about it?
So I was Ricky's laboring still and slowly got on the trail, but I was, you know, they're hard days in the sun. And then going, I was, yeah, working, then training in the afternoons every night. And that's how it was for my first three fights with my first trainer. Then it came to a point where, this is another little story where it can help kids, is just trust your gut instinct. Because my trainer at the time, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he wasn't really there for me. And it showed that in my last couple of professional fights with him. So I made a move to Bondi Boxing Club. And I was still working, and then I would finish work at 3:30 and drive out into the city and go to training. And I'd train there till like, get there 4:30, sometimes 5. And I'd train till like 6:37. And I'd get home 8 o'clock and go to bed. That was
so
my life.
So you're doing like 16-hour days working and training.
Yeah, it's just full on. And just to train. And that's, I don't know, it feels just, I think that's another thing that got me here is to go through that, to be able to work as a Bricky's labourer for 8 hours a day, then go train, then do your strength conditioning, then run. It was just like, yeah. I couldn't do that now.
You couldn't do it now? You don't have to do it now, but do you?
Yeah.
Hey, you've had a few blessings along the way, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm very blessed to be where I'm at. COVID threw a fucking spanner in the works, but yeah, I'm very blessed to be where I'm at. You know, I was a very shy kid at the start going into that gym and... I didn't say hi to anyone. I just walked in, did my stuff and left. And it was hard getting to know people and like get out of my comfort zone. I was basically by myself. So,
well, you'd be finding it hard to trust people too back then, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And at the time, Mum wasn't around. I was living with my ex-girlfriend's parents.
Yep.
So it was sort of like fucking, yeah, just put chaos. It in a bowl and stir it up.
Yeah. I like that. Put it in a bowl and stir it up. That's a good way of putting it.
I was going in there, so I was really quiet and just going in there, and it was hard. Then he goes, all right, we'll start by getting a few fights. And yes, had a few fights with Tony, the owner of Bondi, Tony Del Vecchio. He's like a father figure to me now. He takes care of me. The one like the one I never had growing up, just guiding me. Yeah, we're so close. Me and Tony, we're just fucking, we're like best friends, so, which is cool.
That is cool. And really, really cool, especially for a young man, you know, like you, you know, you obviously got there at a time in your life where you really needed that male sort of support.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of changes, both physically, mentally.
Yeah.
You know, you quite easily could have just fell back into that rut and just said, fuck it. I got no mum here, no dad. Basically, I'm on my own. Like, fuck the world. Mm. You know, rebel, 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 which happens a lot, unfortunately.
That's what I was thinking. And you know, I was going, fuck this. There's no reason to keep going. I was fighting for chips. I remember one fight I had with him. I walked out with $300 in my pocket.
Wow. And that's and a pro bout. Like,
what the fuck am I doing this for? Like $300 cash in my wallet with $50 notes.
And you earning what? $1,100 a week when you're a fucking 15-year-old kid.
It was far. Yeah, it was far.
That's hard.
But you know, I think that's what drove me here. I think all that. Yeah, it's a fucking story. I just remember walking out of this fight and I was like, fuck, something's got to change. Something's got to... Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
What changed? Awesome. What changed for you?
Well, I decided, obviously, bigger fights.
Yep. So was that like a different management structure or did you have a good team around you that you could trust? 100%. I mean, there's a lot of shonkies out there in the boxing game. I mean, that's just common knowledge.
Yeah, there is.
And that's not to disrespect anybody. But
at the time, Tony was my manager, trainer and manager. So he was getting me fights around here. And this fight popped up with Isaac Buckley, who's a surfer from around here, Northern Beaches. It ended up being a big fight because it was basically Narrabeen versus DY.
Hey, and DY, I was born in Manly District Hospital.
So
no, DY grew up there, yeah, Oaks Avenue. Fuck so you, Narrabeen yuppies.
Nah.
Hey.
And then
fuckheads.
That fight brought a lot of interest, especially around here.
Yep.
It was on Fox Sports and you know, everyone was saying I was too young, I was gonna get knocked, like this guy's tough.
So he was older.
Ended up, yeah, he, I think, I don't know what age, I think it was 30 when I fought him.
Wow.
I was 19. No, 21 when I fought him.
Wow.
And, yeah, I've ended up getting him out of there in the third round, knocked him out in the third. And that, I think that's where it started. That first TV show, everyone's eyes were on me, and I sort of, you know, I don't want to brag, but I sort of stole the show.
You are who you are. This is what I'm, you know, love about what I do is there's no bullshit on here, and you are a fucking contender. You are somebody that, you know, I think everybody needs to start keeping an eye out for.
No, I think, yeah, that night I stole the show and it just started from there. The next fight I had, it was on a Paul Gallen undercard and we're versing an undefeated kid from Queensland. Long story short, no one thought I was going to win.
You love being the underdog, don't you?
Yeah. I just saw a video of this kid and I just go, you know, and this story is before that fight, my trainer called me on the 31st and New Year's and he's like, I was literally had a six pack in my hand just to go watch some fireworks.
Yeah.
And fuck, he called me and he's like, look, you're fighting February 8th. And I go, oh yeah, who? And he goes, oh, this kid called Adam Copland. He's undefeated. And I go, he's like, what are you doing? And I was just like, to be honest, I'm going to go drinking and watch a firework. And he goes, well, fucking better, you know, you just put him down. So I ended up putting him down, going for a run in the rain.
Really? So you just instantly respected that and, you know, like most young men, it's New Year's Eve, oh, fuck it, I'll just train tomorrow or the next day. What's one day? But you instantly went game on.
No, I went game, like it just flicked a switch. It was...
that is unreal.
Something weird. And I only had 4 weeks to prepare for that. Because then you go 4 weeks, then 1 week, you know, tapering off.
Do you guys usually run a 12-week camp?
Usually, it depends what your level of fitness is, I think. going into a camp. If you're really unfit and have to drop weight, then yeah, it's a longer camp's more a bit better. But if you're fit going into a camp, I think 6-8 weeks is enough.
I've got a mate up here on the Gold Coast who you'd be very well aware of, Benny Mahoney. And Benny's mate, we fought out of the same Muay Thai gym for many, many years, and he's now a very successful and crafty boxer. You know, he's on the go any hour of any day, and he backs up. I've seen him, you know, do 3-4-man tournaments and jump out and put his hand up for a fight overseas. Or you know, it blows my mind. Like, I've watched him. Mentally, he's just unbeatable.
Yeah, we haven't had that situation yet, but I know Tony's the man that will pull me out. I probably won't pull myself out.
No, you wouldn't, and that's the thing, you know, and I can see it, and just what I've learned about you, you've got a heart of a lion, did this opponent of Benny Mahoney's. So, and I wish I could actually say his name, and I'm trying to remember it, so I'm not trying to be disrespectful. But, you know, it takes a certain caliber of person, you know, to do what you guys do on a professional level, you know, constantly backing up, you know, like you say, you put that six pack down.
Yeah. And it just clicked. It was weird.
What happened with the fight? What was the sort of progression after that?
So I went in there and people were going, people in the boxing world were going, oh, to Tony, my trainer, was going, oh, why are you taking this fight? Like, fuck. Mateo's young. I think he was 23 and I was still 20.
Did people think that it was a little bit sort of out of your reach at that stage?
Yeah. Yeah. And I went out and I completely like just out boxing and I was unfit. So, which I don't know, the first three rounds, I went out there and I just started throwing bombs. I just wanted to prove to him that I'm fucking not going anywhere. He's in there for a fight. And I won the first three rounds, scored a knockdown in the second, so I knew I was ahead by fucking 4 or 5 rounds by the third. So I knew I had time and I knew I didn't have the gas. So I was ahead. So 4, he won, 5, he won. Oh, no, it could have been 4, he won, 5, he won, then 6, 7, 8, 9. I think I stole him. But, yeah, I needed 4 and 5 to get my gas back. And then 6, 7, 8, I just, yeah.
It's crazy, that second wind, isn't it? You can't explain it to people. Like, you know, your adrenaline's pumping. I think truly only fighters will ever know.
Yeah, all you hear is his breathing and your breathing.
Isn't it amazing, though? But you could be in a room full of people like you have been, you know, and you can only imagine on the North Shore, it would have been loud as.
Fuck, it just blacks out for me. It's like I just, in the zone.
Talk about the zone. Where is your zone at the moment?
2 weeks ago was good, but then before that, I was struggling to come into the gym. Like, I was motivated. I was still going in, still showing up, but it was taking a lot out of me to keep showing up, because my fight got cancelled. I was supposed to be fighting in Dubai on October 9. And
is that your first major international fight?
It was my third.
And how have you gone overseas?
I've won them all. Went well. We fought in Dubai once, Vietnam, now Dubai twice. We're going over for the third time. And, it's fun going out of your comfort zone, not knowing where to go. I've never been to Dubai. Like, I would have never thought in my life I would have seen that place. And I've got to go twice and I know I'm heading back, so I just to fight overseas, to not know where you're going, what you're eating, how you're going to cut weight, what gyms to go to. The first time was it took me a few days, jet lag as well, so to deal with that. But just getting there and realizing, fuck, I mean, I don't know nothing about this dude where I'm fighting. Like,
nothing for you to look up or
like I've seen videos, but I sort of like, you know, where they come from, how they've grown up. You can sort of tell in how they fight, how much anger they're going to bring. And this dude was from India. And I remember stalking his Instagram page and this guy was You know, he's from poverty. And I was watching his Instagram stories and he knew how to fight. Like, he was fucking there to fight. Tough. And I remember I got there. It was just a shambles of, it was my first fight with MTK Global, who I'm signed with. And I've never had a fight where they've go, oh yeah, it's happening. But then like, they don't show anything how it was happening. Cause it was my first fight with them. So it was hard to sort of believe them. And trainer said it was happening. And then boom, 4 weeks beforehand, we got a call up. I had to switch on again. I wasn't the fittest. I wasn't in the best shape, but I told myself I'm going to go there and I'm going to fucking, I'll die in that ring. And that's all I was thinking. When I got there, I just remember.
Did your whole mindset change once you got there and everything was there?
Yeah, I sort of felt like, what's the word? Like, and do my worth being here? Like, am I really that good to be overseas? Or like, I was questioning myself. Going,
like second guessing sort of thing.
Yeah, I was going, fuck, I'm young. Is this stuff actually happening? That's what I was questioning. I was going, fuck this, you know, this is moving pretty quick.
Yeah.
I was already international and I was sort of second guessing myself and I knew I wasn't in the best shape.
Was that intimidating for you though? Did you find that started to become a little bit overwhelming and, you know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, you talk to a lot of professional athletes and they say the same thing. You know, I've had this conversation before with, you know, some of the greatest athletes in Australia and I haven't seen anyone not feel similar to what you're saying.
Yeah, it was the first time where I go, fuck, I'm scared. I'm fucking scared of you. Not scared in the way where I was going to fight, but like, fuck, I was just like, I got there and didn't know where I was going. I felt lost.
Yep.
I didn't know where to eat, had to cut weight. So I didn't know where to eat, where to go, what to eat. And we're in Dubai, so it's kebab shops fucking everywhere around. Like,
tell you what, Arab food, mate, you know, living in Sydney can be fucking very addictive. I've got a real problem I love my manoush. As you can tell, look at the belly. Thank God I live in the Queensland, but I can't get it.
But we were lucky there was a Nando's. And that's how we're cutting weight. We're just eating the little sides of like lentils,
yeah,
little rice things. Wow. Just, and it was crazy how we're going to Nando's. Just so that's the only place we could go.
Mateo, did the promoters not sort of get involved to assist you guys on that sort of thing, letting you like? Okay, now and tell me I'm completely wrong here, and this is also too for all the listeners out there. I would assume that at that level, they would assist you, you know, and give you information about where you can eat, you know, where you can train, where you can use saunas for weight cut if you need to use it, or
sort of, yeah. We had a gym there we could go to. There was a sauna there, and but then again, it's all new. You're walking into that gym, like especially as a kid, you're walking in, you're just second guessing yourself every time. You're like really shy and just walking in those places, go, am I meant to be here? And that's what I was saying to myself the whole trip. Yeah, it was just hard. Going to the gym, just having Tony there, it just felt like very surreal. I was trying to take it all in, and then it came fight night and we're fighting outside.
Okay,
you could see you could see the whole of Dubai.
Wow. Like
the whole city. We're fighting on the golf course, the Emirates Golf Club. And it just sunk in there and I was like...
Thousands of people?
There was a few hundred people there. Yeah. But there was powerful people
I can imagine. In the crowd. All the sheiks.
One of the sheiks came. So he was there watching my fight. It was pretty cool, actually. I remember in the back and Tony was... Something wasn't right with me.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was. It was me second guessing myself. And
is this right up to the moment you're about to go over the ropes?
Yeah, I was doing pads and Tony saw something that wasn't right and I wasn't sweet. I don't know what it was. And he went to his mate. He got, because I went one of my stable mates. He was over there as well. So he had a chat to him, but he didn't tell me until after. Oh, they had a chat. He goes, what the fuck's wrong with Mateo? Like, is he okay? And he just goes, yeah, he's sweet. And I remember walking out and I was like in fear, scared. And I just remember going out there and saying to myself, and then again, I'll die in this ring.
Yep.
I don't care. And I remember the first round he came out and he was out there to fucking hurt me. And it's nothing I haven't seen before. But just questioning myself that whole trip was hard. And then I dropped him in the first round.
And did your confidence sort of lift? Did you feel this, I can do this, I'm here, I can do this?
Yeah. So saying myself, I just got to survive. I just got to win this fight and I know I can be here. And that's what went to, I just got to get through this fight and I know what I have to change, what I have to do wrong and right, and I knew I could be there. But it was just putting me there for the first time was hard. He hurt me in the seventh round and I had to dig deep. He hurt me with a body shot and I went back on the ropes, like trying to gasp for air.
Yep.
And he's wailing shots at me. And I just remember being in the zone at that time. Like everything he threw, I was so in the zone, it didn't hurt. Like it was just like, all right. I got through that round and I went to the eighth round and I ended up getting him with a shot that rocked him and then I got him out of there. Thank fuck.
Would you say today one of your toughest fights?
Yeah, I made that fight really tough. And then that fight as well, there was something wrong with the canvas. It was really cushiony.
Fuck that.
Way too cushiony.
I have fucking fought in one of those rings and I cannot tell you how fucked it feels under your feet. You can't set.
Oh.
You know, like we were throwing kicks and stuff, so we're, using a lot more sort of driving up and pushing through the point of your foot, you know what I mean? And you're constantly, every time you go to turn that foot up to twist your hip to kick or something, you just sunk and you fell off balance. It was like you were a fucking kook.
Yeah, it was like that. So I went back to I was in the third round and I went to Tony. I was like, my legs are fucked. I don't know what's wrong. But we realized that I was on my toes, but it was so cushiony, my heels are touching. So it was like fighting on sand.
Yes.
So I just had to stand there in the pocket and just fight with him for eight rounds for the next six rounds.
Wow. And
that's how it was. It was just like an instinct thing. I just had to fight.
Do you think the way you were raised, Mateo, has given you that drive, that fire, that lion's attitude that, when the going gets tough, fuck it, I can get through this? Because, growing up, dad not being there, mum a hard worker, and as you said, mum not being there, you're fending on your own. It's got to have come back to you somewhere in your life and made you who you are.
Yeah. I say to myself, that's harder than fighting. Going through that stuff, the mental stuff. It's the fighting's easy. I just tell myself if I can go through those dark days, I've had those dark days. The fighting's easy. It's just you and some other person. That's nothing.
I find the thing is it stings, but you get over it. Your body heals.
I've had those bad days where you do get suicidal thoughts and you do go through those stuff. And you go, why the fuck am I here? Why the fuck do I keep going? Is it going to get any better? And that's when I was younger, going through those days. But then, as you said, going through those days, it's made me who I am today. I've just got this. So these people I've been fighting for in Dubai, they're very good mates with MTK Global. So they wanted to give me a contract at the start of the year and I finally got it last week.
Congratulations, brother. Four-year deal. So how many fights is that in 4 years?
The first year is four fights.
Wow. Yep.
And then the next 3 years is three fights a year.
Okay.
But they're already talking about titles and whatnot, but they're going to move me up, get me the proper fights, still test, but move me up the rankings the proper way. And, you know, I'm truly blessed to have that because a lot of fighters need that, the funding, the trust.
Absolutely.
Because that's what breaks a lot of fighters is you need money to get to these places. You need money to pay for opponents. You need money to bring them in and whatnot. And these guys are taking care of all that. What's best is it's on an international scene, getting me out of my comfort zone again. And
you were straight out battlers, you know, but here, here you are a young man that's come out the other side to become a man. And now he's chasing his own dream. And mate, you're signed. The dream's alive.
Yeah, the dream's there. I just got to stay in the gym every day.
Is it hard?
Yeah, it's a constant battle. You know, once you're fit, you think you can be fitter. It's a constant battle. So every day you're playing with your mind, going into the gym, knowing you can do better. So you're just constantly chasing, like, perfection, I guess, as a fighter.
I think, if you look at the champions of the world, I think a lot of them are perfectionists, especially in the craft of boxing, because if you're not on your technique and you're not absolutely perfect, well, I mean, as perfect can be, you're going to get outdone. But, you know, we have a lot of young people, you know, your age and a little bit older that listen to The Clink, and I'm constantly getting messages, and I think that you have a really powerful story that would inspire a lot of young people out there. What would you say to these young men?
I don't know. It's hard. You have to find something in you. But I say find something that you're passionate about. And don't stop, you know, chasing it. If you love making, if you love surfing, if you love boxing, or if you're good at school, fucking put 100% effort into whatever you're doing. Don't go 10% here, 10% there.
Where does Mateo see Mateo now? What vision have you got?
Me.
Yep.
You. I've got.
Fucking you. Future world champion, right, you.
That's the dream. That's the end goal. That's where I see myself, you know. When I'm training, I visualize that stuff all the time, just me holding the belt. And I know the guys that hold the belts and I know I can beat them, but I'm not there yet. I'm not in their position yet to be putting my name with their name, and so I'm not up there yet.
You got to earn it. You got to work for it and earn it, don't you? It doesn't just get handed to you.
Exactly. No. So I got to go through tough fights. I got to experience – you know, experience these tough fights in the coming years to be able to be there. But I know in my heart I can get through them, and I just got to be fit. And when the time comes to fight those guys that hold the belt, I believe I can beat them.
Have you got anything that you want to tell us, you know, up and coming that you know of at the moment, or?
So I've just signed this contract. They're thinking of putting a fight in Dubai at the end of December. So hope, fingers crossed, it happens. They've gave us a spot on the Tim Zhu undercard.
Really?
But the problem is finding an opponent, which is hard.
Who's the main man at the moment in the country?
Bilal Akaway.
Ooh.
But from what I've heard, he's just had a back surgery. Who knows how long he'll be. I don't know what's going on with him because I don't really focus my energy on other people, you know.
Yeah.
But and then again, he's 28. I'm 22. He's fought for a world title. I haven't. And my name's getting brought up with these people. So, and you got Rowan Murdoch. He's signed with MTK. The same company as me.
So does that mean that that'll prevent you guys from matching because you're under the same management company?
We've helped each other in sparring, and we've talked about that.
Yeah.
That this could be a possible fight, but it's not right now because
sure
it doesn't make sense.
No.
That's why we have signed this contract in Dubai, so I can get fights overseas. I can bring in overseas opponents from England, from the Middle East, from Africa, you know, tough opponents.
A lot of quality in your division, isn't there? Internationally.
Very.
Yep.
And there's a few guys in the UK that we are going to chase, and we got our eyes on it. I know we can beat them, but we just got to get in that position to get them, and that's it. And that's what this contract is about. They're going to invest money in me, and they're going to put me up there so I can get those fights.
I think that, your journey is an amazing journey. And I think that where you are at this present moment is somewhere where something great's going to come from it. Do you regret anything growing up now when you look back, or are you proud of everything because of where you're at and who you are as a man?
Nah, I'm proud of what I went through to get here today. Because imagine if I grew up not hand fed, but more comfortable, more.
Like most Narrabeen fucking surfers.
maybe I wouldn't be here today, but I'm grateful I went through everything. You know, I did everything young. I know what's out there. I know it's bad, so I don't do it.
And Mateo, you're still young. That's the beautiful thing. You know, you've had these little samples in your life, taste testers, if you will, that, you know, you could have continued down certain roads that no doubt you'd either be dead like your uncle and your dad said, you know, dead or in jail. It was a guarantee of either way. Yet here you are, traveling the world, signed to a contract, and it all stems from the tough times that you endured as a young man to being now a mentally tough man, fighter, and somebody that really has an opportunity at the world.
The world's at my feet, and I just got to keep doing the right things, keep training, just keep dedicated, stay in the gym, stay out of trouble, and, you know, I can get there. But I just got to, dedicate myself. Just keep dedicating myself and I'll get it.
I'm going to end this on that note because I truly believe what you just said then, there's nothing better you could actually add. That's a really powerful statement. And, mate, to credit to you, I want to say thank you very much for coming on the Clink today. And, guys, Mateo, give them all your social medias and stuff. Give yourself a bit of a plug here. You seem very humble, mate, and I really I can see you getting a little bit blushed. Mate, where can people find you and want to know more about you? Give them the info, brother.
You can follow me on, I'm mostly
on Tinder.
Best on Instagram.
Just swipe left, swipe right.
Mateo Tapia, Mateo.tapia on Instagram.
Mateo Tapia. I've got to say, mate, I believe you're going to be a future world champion. And as I said, word on the street is there's a lot of others out there. Mate, thank you for your story of redemption. As I said, it was a bit of a flip of a coin in a great positive way. And I truly believe, mate, your story is definitely something that will inspire a lot of other people. Thank you very much for being here today.
Hopefully you can inspire the next kids coming up. You know, it's not just... There is dark days, but if you strive towards something, something will come. Something will flip.
That wraps up season 2 of The Clink, and we want to thank all of our guests across the year. Our sponsors, O'Brien Criminal Solicitors, Voice of a Survivor, and Mount Would You Surf. Brent will be back in 2021 with season 3 of The Clink, and it will start mid-January. In the meantime, if you want to catch up on some of the old videos of all of our chats across season 1 and season 2, you can head to our Patreon page and sign up. You can find it at www.patreon, that is patreon.com/theclink. Or you can grab the link in the bio of the Clink Podcast Instagram page. Next week, we'll have a special best of edition of the Clink Podcast in your feed, wrapping up the last 2 seasons. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from everyone here at the Clink. Real stories of redemption.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop. For the record. For the record. Yeah. For the record. Yeah. For the record. Yeah. For the record. For the record.
Want to thank a new sponsor who's just come on board, Dr. Pickles Tattoo Aftercare and Lifestyle Products. They're made in Brisbane and are known right around the world. They have this amazing balm. It's called the Original Tattoo Balm. You seal and protect your tattoo with the OG. I've just been using it on my leg after I had it done, and I tell you now, my skin feels amazing and there's a great shine to it. They also have an antiseptic spray you can spray on and wipe over your tattoo to keep it nice and clean so you don't get any infections. They've got a 3-in-1 wash. It's all natural, smells great, packed full of peppermint, citrus, and wait for it, hemp oils. How good's that? Plus, they have a SPF 50 sunscreen, which acts as a moisturizer as well as protecting your tattoos from fading and stop them from getting sun damage. Right now, though, for the Clink listeners, they're offering 15% off with the code CLINK. Just head to drpickles.com. That's drpickles.com.